You're listening to the Myth Korean Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Mike Hernandez, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks. She had a pet snake. She bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there to tell her what to do. So she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Myth Koreans Podcast. I'm Oren. None of the normal hosts are here, but instead, I have gotten us two excellent guest hosts. First, I would like to welcome back Reese.
Hello.
You have heard Reese before. They have quite an excellent presence on this here podcast. And now, for the first time, I would like to welcome Ellie to the podcast.
Hello.
Ellie is an excellent writer and was once part of a really great conversation that we had on the Borg back when I was doing All Things Trek. So she has many opinions and you should listen to them. For this episode today, we are talking about portraying AI in fiction. Because I think we all love robots. Let me make sure. Do we have any machine life hating people in this podcast?
Oh, goodness, no. I adore all the robots. Give them all to me.
Yeah, I love robots.
Good. We've got that settled. No carbon chauvinists here. So here's a question for both of you. When you are either portraying AI in your own fiction, or if you are reading someone else's portrayal of AI, do you think in general that authors should go for should they try to make the AI, like, seem more human? Or less human?
I think that's a really interesting question, and I thought about it, and I think there are really interesting directions you could go in both directions. It depends on whether you're exploring kind of philosophical questions about what consciousness is, which I think is a great thing that AI stories can do, or trying to explore some element of human nature by using robots as kind of a foil for that. There are just so many different possibilities. I don't know that there's one answer that I would give to that.
Yeah, I don't know that I would say, you know, one is better than the other. I know that when I am writing AI, I tend to like to start with less human and have it be kind of a growth where the rest of the cast is getting to kind of help shape the AI as they become more human.
Okay, so it sounds like you kind of favor a bit of a data approach then in that general archetype.
Yes, definitely.
I don't know whether to bring this up or not, because it's basically I'm working on a story now that has a number of artificial intelligences in it, and I'm embarrassed that I don't actually have anything remotely done to show anyone or plug.
Well, that's the nature of writing short stories. Please, I would love to hear about this.
I was reading an article about, like, all the different ways in which artificial intelligence tropes are used, and it made me really want to work with those. So I ended up imagining sort of a future in which there are all of these robots who are kind of becoming sentient unexpectedly, and the robots themselves are taking very different approaches to what it means to them to be robots. So it's like you have some who are quite assimilationist and adopt human names and mannerisms and, like, go out of their way to make the humans around them feel more at ease and be able to relate to them like humans. And then you have others who are taking a really different approach and are, like, really trying to, like, approach this kind of separatist ideological purity, and, like, they speak in binary and give themselves names that are not pronounceable vocally, and, like...
I love that.
That's excellent.
Man, that sounds like really fertile ground for social commentary. Like, that, I mean, it sounds like you basically described the pressure on minorities on whether or not they should attempt to assimilate with the majority.
Yeah, and that's what it's about for me a lot, too. And I think that the image that really, like, crystallized that idea for me is I just, like, suddenly had this image in my mind of like a small ship with, like, a 5-person crew, and two of the people on that crew are robots. And, like, everywhere they go, they, like, go to parties or something, and people will chat up one of them and say, like, oh, you must be really great for you to have another robot on the crew. And this robot will just kind of, like, swirl their drink and say, like, no, we actually don't have anything in common. We kind of hate each other.
You gotta send that story to me when it's ready. I'm excited about that now.
Thanks.
So if we have some AI for the purposes of a story are gonna be, like, less human, right? Like, so for, you know, whether it is an AI that has made a conscious choice to be less human or one that just by the nature of how it was made doesn't think the same way that a human does, how do we make a human audience interested in that AI character, right? If they are actually thinking differently than we are, what's the bridge? What do we build for that?
So I think in that respect, you can use AI as an analog for neurodivergence. And in that way, you can kind of shape a story around, you know, how thinking differently isn't actually that uncommon, and how, you know, in this robot, you're seeing it probably in a very exaggerated form, but you can take and shape that into something very relatable, especially for any of your audience who happens to be neurodivergent.
A lot of people, I think, could benefit from that because we tend to have the false assumption that everyone thinks the same way we do, and that's just not true.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really awesome way of saying it. I was thinking of really similar thoughts just about how, like, the relationship between robots and humans or vice versa could just be, I mean, not even necessarily neurodivergence, but just the way that all of us really, I think in really different ways, and sometimes it's hard to relate to each other. But as an allegory for neurodivergence, especially, is really interesting to me.
Now, what about a robot or an AI of some kind that not only necessarily thinks maybe differently than a human, but thinks on, like, a very different level than humans? Because, like, at least following our current path of technology, it seems likely that if we ever do create true AI, it will probably be able to process information, like, much faster than a human can, right? Because our brains are made of slow meat. And so is that a challenge? Like, are we going to have trouble making a reader invested in the plight of an artificial intelligence that can, like, calculate billions of operations per second?
You know what that actually reminds me of is a story by Ted Chiang that's about, I forget what the name of the story was, but it was kind of amazing, even though it was really dense and weird, but it was about someone who, as a side effect of some kind of medical procedure, basically ends up becoming exponentially more intelligent until he's, like, basically on par with the most sophisticated AI we can imagine. So that was still a human being as the protagonist, and that story managed to be really interesting, just about all the things this character did with his mind when he had, like, limitless cognitive resources.
Now, would you say the primary conflict of the story was, like, was it about him dealing with his increased intelligence, or was it about, like, the external things that he was doing with it?
Probably mostly the things that he was doing with it, but where the interesting conflict comes in is that he discovers that there's someone else out there who's basically had the same procedure and is having the same side effect, and they end up having contrary purposes.
Sort of a duel of gods situation here.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if you have someone who, you know, is processing miles ahead of us, you see, you know, characters who have superhuman abilities, and you can still find ways of relating them to the audience. And I think in the same way, you can do that with super intelligence, as it were, where it's just a matter of finding the humanizing aspects and bringing those forward alongside the super abilities.
Yeah, I'm sure you could probably get inspiration looking at a number of superhero stories. I'm sure there are at least some well-done sort of super genius type characters. I guess most superheroes have, like, physical strength and still kind of think at our speed, but, like, there's got to be at least a few out there that you could look to. Now, here's a thought, because I've seen a number of stories that are confronted with the issue of a mixed cast of artificial intelligence and, for lack of a better term, biological intelligence. So AI and BI, as it were. And in these stories, I tend to notice that the one of two things generally happens. Either the artificial intelligence, like the writer kind of artificially constrained, that's a bad term for the discussion we're having, but that's the only thing I can think of, constrains what they can do so as not to show up, you know, all of the biological characters who are still theoretically important to the plot. And I'm thinking of Star Trek does this a lot, right? Like you have the Doctor who, at least in Voyager, can supposedly just download being a captain into his program, and now he's like good to go. And it's like, well, why is he the only hologram that does that? That feels like everyone, that feels like a really useful ability, and they don't really explore it, right? Then the other option seen sometimes is like you end up with the AI basically doing everything. Well, the BI characters kind of just stand there and are like, someone, I'm glad we got out of bed today. So I would be interested to know if you folks have any thoughts on how to balance that perspective. And this is a little bit more of a nitty gritty thing, right? This is a little bit less of the bigger picture we've been looking at, and more of like a kind of in the weeds of the story.
Preliminarily, I just imagine that machine intelligence would work kind of similar to the way that human intelligence works, where a lot of us are like really intelligent and really capable in a particular way, but maybe not so much so in a lot of other ways. I mean, there could just as easily be machines that are incredibly capable at thinking a particular kind of thought or handling a certain kind of situation, but maybe they're not as good at diplomacy or, you know, all kinds of human things.
So kind of like a chess master type situation where it's like, I'm, you know, this person is really, really good at chess, but that doesn't mean they're going to be really, really good at everything else that you have to do.
Yeah, quite possibly. Could be that their consciousness is optimized for a particular task or something of that sort.
And that feels like the sort of thing you could establish at the beginning of your story, right? So you're not, like, left with these unanswered questions about what capabilities your artificial intelligence has.
Yeah, or it could even be a part of the artificial intelligence's character arc, if they're a character, that they grow into a particular specialty or...
Yeah, I was actually thinking something similar there, where, you know, how I like the AI gets to grow up around the others. You can definitely incorporate that into it, where it's like, yes, I may be able to do these things, but I am choosing to specialize in this one area because it's what interests me. And if you're going for an AI that does, you know, develop passions and interests, that can very much be included in that they gravitate towards something specifically, just as, you know, we as people gravitate towards certain things.
Okay. All right. You guys have some, you folks have some good answers here. I like it. Here's another thought. So we've been thinking mostly about science fiction, but it's actually very common to have artificial intelligence in fantasy. We just don't typically call it that. Do you guys think there's a good analogy between, say, like a robot and a golem?
I would say that because a golem is often a construct made for a certain purpose, it definitely could be, you know, very similar to a robot, but possibly more constrained to, I guess, a more simplified AI or a more simplified robot where, you know, it's kind of limited to this purpose that it's given. It's limited to what it's, for lack of a better term, master wants it to do.
Yeah, I'm having trouble calling up a lot of examples mentally of artificial intelligences that I've read in fantasy. I'm not as knowledgeable about that, but I feel like science fiction is often, there's often an emphasis on the, like, nuts and bolts and sometimes even the mathematics of how exactly an artificial intelligence works, and I don't feel like I've seen that so much in fantasy.
Yeah, the best example I can probably think of off the top of my head is Discworld, with specifically with the golems in Discworld and, like, the way that they are originally constructed to perform repetitive, like, heavy lifting tasks, and over the course of the books, they eventually decide, you know, we could do other stuff. We don't have to do this all day. And they have they kind of mirror, and I would bet you money that Terry Pratchett had read a number of science fiction stories about, like, you know, robot rights and, like, robots growing beyond their programming. I was like, I bet I could do that in fantasy. And I think you're right that fantasy is less inclined to ask those questions, because fantasy at least tends to have a bit more of a bent towards the outcome rather than the process, and science fiction sometimes has more of a bent on the process.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, I think.
Definitely.
So here's another question. I would love to hear about some of you guys' favorite artificial intelligences in fiction. Shall I start? I've got a couple.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, all right. So one of my favorites will always be Major Kusanagi from Ghost in the Shell, who is not Scarlett Johansson, in case anyone was interested. I don't want any of that. But I'm a big fan of that character, even though I think technically she's supposed to be an uploaded human. But as I recall, there are some questions about that, where she's not 100%. Like, she remembers being a human, but she's like, you know, my memories probably could have been, like, faked. So how do I know? So I found that a particularly interesting question. And, like, I remember there are a couple of points in both the films and the anime series where she kind of starts to wonder, like, A, was I ever human? And B, like, does it matter if I was ever human? Like, I am what I am. And does the fact that my consciousness and memories originally came from a meat brain, does that really affect me? And I found that fascinating. Also, she's a cyborg who kicks ass, which is, you know, I also appreciate that.
A++ on that end.
Yeah, you know, I think I want to give a call out, actually, to the Puppet Master, also from Ghost in the Shell, whose motives remain somewhat opaque throughout that movie, but I was really entranced by the idea of this kind of accidental program that just becomes sentient and develops its own motives and is clearly doing something really interesting with its own consciousness and its desire to evolve. It's kind of like I wish we'd gotten more of a chance to get to know that entity over the course of that movie. But
I remember being kind of puzzled by the end about, like, what its goals were.
Yeah, kind of puzzling.
A little bit.
But that is an interesting, like, way, an interesting take on artificial intelligence is kind of the emergent property intelligence. Like, it was never intentionally built. It just kind of happened that way.
Yeah, and I don't know. Sometimes to me that almost feels more believable than the idea that we would actually succeed in building a complete sentience from the ground up. I mean, it just, like, there are such limitations on how well we understand how our own mind works. And I don't know, there's just a lot of simultaneously kind of like magic and beauty and believability in the idea that we could just build machines that are sophisticated enough that they just kind of wake up one day.
Certainly, we have had a number of technologies that had emergent properties we never foresaw. So I would not write that possibility out. I tend to think it's more likely if we make AI, we'll do it on purpose, but I certainly don't think it's an impossibility.
Yeah, I'm being a little bit whimsical, I know, but
hey, nothing wrong with whimsy. Science fiction is plenty of room for whimsy. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Reese, what do you got for us?
Oh, man. So going away from Ghost in the Shell, as mm-hmm. as hard as that is. One of my favorites is actually Gertie from Moon.
Oh, Moon is such a good movie.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's a really good movie. And I think that Gertie is a really excellent kind of show of an AI with a kind of single purpose, whose, you know, emotions are displayed in a very simple way, but are very real, and how, you know, Gertie's carrying out the instructions can be kind of, you know, wobbly from exactly what was probably intended, just to make things more comfortable for the one they're supposed to be protecting.
Or maybe keeping an eye on, if I recall the plot of Moon correctly. Yeah, see, I'm a big fan of AIs that don't have, like, a full human face interface? That's awkward to say. But, you know, like, I find it more interesting to try to interact, especially if the AI isn't the viewpoint character, to try to interact with AI that just has a different, like, means of communicating with you, which is one of the reasons why I liked Edie in Mass Effect more when she didn't have her human body.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
And like, her human body... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I was just gonna say that I think that's like a big place where I see a lot of room for untapped possibility and kind of portrayals of AI that I'm familiar with. It's just, like, they're very often very humanoid in a way that just seems like it's really restricting exactly what AI could be capable of being, that we could have like sort of human-like intelligences that have really different sorts of bodies from ourselves, that they would have a whole completely different kind of existence by way of that.
I was gonna say, like, I was really into the idea of Edie as the ship. Like, the ship was Edie's body and the sensors were her eyes and, like, you know, and that sort of thing. And, like, she's not terrible as a humanoid robot. I've seen worse, but it feels kind of boring after that, right? It's why does she only have one? Like, she kind of makes it clear at one point that the humanoid body isn't her main platform. The ship is still her main platform, but, like, you know, if she's like that, why is she limited to only one extension, right? Like, I feel like she could probably handle a few more.
And that's part of why I loved Legion so much.
Yes!
Is that, yeah. Because even though Legion has essentially a humanoid body, like, Legion is this kind of amalgamation of numerous different platforms, or, sorry, Legion is the platform, but Legion contains all these different sub-programs that are all basically intelligent themselves and are all working together in order to create this, like, gestalt consciousness.
Yeah, the Geth,
like,
are really cool. They're probably my favorite part of the Mass Effect universe. Like, in general, I think that the Mass Effect universe is okay, but then the Geth, I think, really elevate it, because I love the idea of the each Geth platform containing, like, millions or maybe billions of individual Geth, I think runtimes is what they called them. And, like, each runtime probably isn't fully sentient. It's probably not smart enough to be considered that. But altogether, they create these sentient consciousnesses. And they're basically, like, walking cyber democracies where they all vote on stuff. And, like, it usually happens so fast we don't notice. But then there's that really great story in Mass Effect 2 where they have this, like, this deadlock that they can't resolve. And they, like, kind of start having, like, a personality crisis over it. I found that really interesting.
Yeah, that was definitely actually one of my favorite plots, and I would say that they're my favorite part of the Mass Effect universe, but come on, Garrus is.
okay, fine. Scarred Space Bird Boyfriend is great. I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Space Bird Boyfriend.
Yeah, I just loved how the Geth were... They just managed to be a really interesting and very alien kind of consciousness. It's like whenever you interacted with them, you really got this sense that they were just something really different from human beings.
I loved going to their space station, and it didn't have any windows, and it didn't have any atmosphere, because, like, they don't, what do they need with that? Yeah, no, that was beautiful. Now that we're coming up close to the end of our time for this episode, do you guys have any examples of AI that you think are, like, not interesting and would serve as a warning for storytellers, like, just, you know, like, stay away from this. This is not cool, or it's been done too many times, or what have you.
I think what I would volunteer is that there's, like, this whole trope of the fembot, kind of, as an archetype, and I've seen fembots of all kinds appear in all kinds of different settings as just, like, clearly a foil for the author's kind of problematic ideas about women or how they relate to women.
No, but it's fine, because it's a robot. Don't worry about it. Everything's okay.
Oh, so I would just say, like, if you really feel like you must have a fembot in your story, like, there are probably ways to do that that are actually interesting, that create an interesting character and say interesting things with that character, but I would say beware.
So I watched Ex Machina a while back, which I feel has gotten, like, all the awards for, like, supposedly being very intelligent sci-fi, and, like, I was kind of into it at first, because I'm like, okay, so you have this billionaire who's clearly, like, an abusive jerk who's, like, made this fembot to, like, you know, do basically what you were saying, to, like, adhere to his weird ideas about women, and I was kind of into that, because it seemed like that's what the movie was about. But then, like, at the end, Ava is the AI's name, she betrays the main character for basically no reason. And then, like, it's sort of just playing into the stereotype of the evil fembot. It's like, why did she do that? I don't understand. What was the point of that?
Yeah.
I hear you. I really liked the way that movie turned the fembot archetype on its head, but I was less passionate about how it really kind of just kept up the standard trope about robots where it's like they're either butlers or they are just human killing machines.
Yeah. And, like, I felt like it had a lot of potential, and then, like, at the end, they wanted to make, like, Ava eviler or whatever, and I don't get what the point of that was. It just, I felt like the movie had already had its natural climax, and then they were like, okay, now here's another one. I was like, come on, guys, we don't need that. Reese, do you have any advice for AI that authors should avoid?
Oh, man. So along the lines of the fembot, I just want to say that, like, be aware of consent when it comes to your AIs, and, like, do they have the capacity to consent? Especially if you're doing the, like, once again, my favorite of the growing AI who is learning from the people around them. Just be very, very aware of that, and, you know, it could be something to explore, but make sure you're exploring it very, very much aware of what you're doing and what you are looking into, rather than just, you know, abusing your AI.
Yeah, that's a really good thought, because it's kind of like, it's too easy to write an AI who the other characters or the author kind of regard like an appliance or a computer, where it's really just this machine that's supposed to be completely subservient to their own demands. But once you give something sentience, it's completely different.
Yeah, and I feel like the Doctor on Voyager would sometimes have that happen, where it was like, in some episodes, the fact that he was treated as a piece of equipment were like a part of the plot, and it was like Star Trek making a statement about how he was a person and not a piece of equipment, but then other episodes they treat him like a piece of equipment and it's like funny, you know, and I'm like, which one is it? Is it funny or serious? Another one from Star Trek that I think authors would do well to keep in mind is making sure that you know if something is supposed to be AI or not, because I've seen this several times. Star Trek's just the biggest example, is the Enterprise computer often acts like it has sentience, but, like, it's never really acknowledged. Like, they sometimes just ask the computer to come up with plans for them. And it's like, man, if the computer can do that, that implies it can think pretty well. And, like, I don't think you realize the implications of that, you know? Like, does that... I think that means you probably can't, you know, wipe its memory without asking permission. I think that's an important thing, and I don't think anybody noticed that. All right, well, we are about out of time. Thank you both for joining me for this episode about AI in fiction. First, do either of you folks have anything that you would like to plug, any work online or just a social media account that you'd like people to check out?
I have a website that's up some of the time. I should really probably put it back up, but it is elbangs.com, like explosions.
Ooh, nice. One that I am working on building is mine. It is Hawk Moth Studios, and that is a Tumblr, so just hawkmothstudios.tumblr.com.
Excellent. And of course you can also read some of Reese's articles are on Mythcreants. And again, thank you both for joining us, and for anyone else, if anything we said piqued your interest, please email us at podcast@mythcreants.com. otherwise, we will see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Bye. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean, and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess.
This has been the Mythcreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Colton.